Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are reimagining the future of customer relationships, how we build them, how we keep them, and how we continue to lead as those customer expectations rapidly evolve. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Brooke Greening.
And we are set to have a great conversation. So Brooke, tell us, what is your hot take?
My hot take is in my world where I help service-based business leaders, that they do not need to look at sales conversations as a necessary evil. It can actually be a great tool to serve our customers and to grow our business.
It's so funny that you say that because I always tell people I am an accidental seller, like not even a reluctant seller, an accidental seller. Like when I started my career, I had no intention of doing sales. And then I joined a startup where, you know, you wear all the hats.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I discovered that sales wasn't what I thought it was. Like my perception of like always be closing and in order for me to win, you have to lose. And right. It's a competition, it's a battle, we're going to arms and all these military terms that we tend to use around sales and selling.
Yeah.
And I really just discovered that, oh, it's just listening to people and figuring out what they need. It's not that hard.
Yeah, 100%. So I, along with you, I did not like go into the sales world. I was getting my master's in counseling at that point, and I just needed to have a job. I needed to find something that would be flexible in my schedule. And so I landed at Wells Fargo Financial in the telemarketing world. And I saw the opposite. I saw a lot of like fist bumping and sales bro and like, hey, she didn't want to do it, but I got her to. And I just kept thinking, this can't be right. This can't be how sales has to be, because my dad was in sales. My brother was in sales. I'm like, they're not jerks. So right. why is it this way? And so everywhere I went, I always saw both sides. It was always some were really great people wanting to be able to serve and help people. And then others were like this manipulative, snippy, whatever you want to call it. And just like, I have to make the sale no matter what, whether it benefits them or not, I have to be able to do that. And so I just kept thinking, this isn't right. This doesn't sit well with me, yet I needed to make sales. If you don't make sales, you don't keep your job. And so I just kept going into more and more sales roles because I enjoyed it. But there was always this tension of how do we do this the right way? And then like you, one day I had this epiphany of, oh, all that I do in counseling is the exact same thing I'm going to choose to do in sales. And I'm going to ask good questions and I'm going to listen and we're going to figure out if we can truly help them. And if we can, great. If we can't, let's give them other resources and move on. And that's when all of the sales started to take off. And then that's when I was able to help other businesses as well.
Well, and it's hard too, because sales gets a bad rap. And I always say sales gets a bad rap and it kind of deserves it. But it's because of those people that you're talking about. I worked with a guy who we had a product. It had a fairly set price and that price would change based on a variety of factors, right? B2B, that's kind of how it works.
Yeah.
And he would try the most extreme markups because he was paid on commission. And so if he got the markup, then that was all basically just like gravy for him.
Yeah.
So I would give him a proposal. Let's say it was like $50,000. And then he would go to the customer and say, it's going to be $250,000. And like that kind of stuff never sat right with me because it was my team that was delivering it. He was reselling my product. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, you're going to basically set this expectation that they're going to get $250,000 of value, but I only have $50,000 of value to give them. And I had to like end that relationship because it was so icky. And nothing wrong with it.
No, but, and you're absolutely right. When people are saying that they kind of feel uncomfortable in sales and that's that ick factor, you're 100%, because HubSpot just came out with a statistic and they're like, so 3% of the population trust those in sales. And 5% trust those in marketing, which for us, we're like, great. That's fantastic. And so they're not wrong. They've already had bad experiences in that. And so for me, when I'm helping the business owners, they've just swung completely to the other side. And they're like, okay, I don't want to have anything to do with it. I know what I don't want to sound like, but I'm not entirely sure what I want to sound like. Like I know who I don't want to become, but I don't really have necessarily the tools and resources to sell the way that I want to. That's in an authentic way. And so that's where we came into play with the service framework to help people, because sales is not the problem. Making money is not the problem. Doing it in a manipulative way is.
Yeah. If you and I are kind of in wild agreement that sales doesn't have to be this way, yes. Why do you think it still is, because I still come across some super slime balls. So why are we in this situation where, like, if you are in our agreement and a lot of people are in agreement, and if 3% of the population doesn't, like, has no, only is the only ones that trust salespeople.
Right.
And it's probably 3% of that would be salespeople.
Right.
Actually, they probably know better. 3% of that has never actually had to buy anything.
Right. Or they've just worked with us. And that
yeah, exactly. So if we're both in wild agreement here,
yes.
Why is it still this way?
Because it's still the prevalent teaching half the time. So everywhere I go, when I'm talking to people, it's not that they didn't have any type of sales training. The training that they had wasn't that authentic piece of it. It's just, and the other piece is that it actually works. I'm not saying if you manipulate someone, it doesn't work. I'm just saying I have no desire to do business in that way. And the clients that I work with have no desire to do business that way. It's still effective. It is not effective in the long run. Like, you burn bridges. People don't trust you. They shout your name. Like, in the long run, it actually hurts you. But in the short term, if you're manipulative, or if you're creating that false sense of urgency, or if you're like pretending that you care and then making people feel really stupid that they're not buying from you, any of those techniques that people use, it unfortunately still works. So it people does. Keep doing it.
I consider myself like a student of salesmanship. And some of the salesmanship that I got really interested in COVID was affiliate marketing. And I don't know if you're familiar with that at all. But for those who aren't, it's basically like you're essentially a marketer for the company. So you might, if you ever are on TikTok, if you see those orange carts where they're trying to sell you Medicube is what I usually get, the face cream kind of scrubber or something like that. They're promoting the product on behalf of the company, but they just get a commission if you make a sale.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I learned about when I was kind of diving deep into that approach to sales was they do this thing where they have an offer and they have a promise, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you go to the next step, you get what's called a squeeze page. That's literally what they call it, which is why when they're trying to like get you to take action right now, like, oh, this offer is going to expire in 30 seconds, or there's only 2 seats left in this, you know, masterclass that's going to change your life. And then they have what's called an upsell page. So if you go through the squeeze page, then you're going to immediately get hit with a, well, I know you just said you would pay $97 for this 1 hour masterclass, but we have an exclusive opportunity for $900. And like, there's nothing wrong with this, right? Because there are people out there who are delivering good services.
Yeah.
And I'm one of them. Like, I have a whole funnel and everything that goes along with it. So I'm not like saying anything against the funnel. It's just that there's so many people out there who are using these techniques to be deceptive. Because I'll 100%. Tell you, I fell for one and I went through and I paid $97 and it was like a really crappy Google Doc that I ended up getting. So, you know, with that, right, again, nothing wrong with the whole concept, but there's so many bad actors out there who are doing things to try to squeeze you.
Yes. And this reminds me, I agree with you 100%. It also reminds me of how the good people who are trying to make a good living and want to serve, so especially in the service industry, like, they're offering basically themselves to help in whatever it is to help the business and what they need, whether accounting or coaching or consulting or whatever the case. And so it's not that they're not bad at what they do. They're getting good results, but they start hiding in plain sight because they're just like, I don't want to be like everybody else. I don't want to do that. And then the biggest piece is, as they want to have these higher ticket investments, you need to be able to talk to people because people need to be able to, like, they want to talk to you. If it's $97 or $100 or $200 or whatever it is, people can make those decisions. But when we start going into the thousands and 10,000s and above, they want to talk to people. And so we start shooting ourselves in the foot when we're saying, but I don't really want to do that. I just want to market my way to my sales goals, when they can realize, like, you don't have to have sleazy sales conversations. You can actually serve your potential clients. It does not have to be a twisting their arm, making them feel like they have to buy right now. Like, that's not sales. That's not how it works, but that's what people think it is. So yeah.
And especially with like your background in counseling, there's so much psychology that goes into sales, right? And the understanding of the human being. And so take us through that. Like, what have you found in the parallels from what you learned in your consulting masters to how people actually make a decision, and with that information, how can listeners use that to start to ethically leverage human psychology in the sales process?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I want to share is that, and you're talking about this, like sales is not wrong. Sales is not evil. Those funnels are not wrong. Those are great ways to help people like walk through a decision because you're not talking to them face to face. So you have to walk them through.
Yeah, great way to scale.
Yeah, exactly. But the difference comes in when people feel like there's that ethical dilemma. And that was the one thing that counseling kept teaching us, that you have a huge power when people are starting to share their problems with you, their struggles with you. And you can either use that power for good as a counselor in regards to giving them direction and hope and helping them to walk through that, or you can be a jerk and you can manipulate them. You can have them do things that benefit you. And that's the same thing when we come in to sales. It's not uncovering their problems that's icky or being manipulative or being invasive. It's what are you going to do with the information once you have it? That's where the line comes in. And in counseling, there is a big ethical red flag when you start using it in different ways. And so then when you look at your sales, you're like, okay, well, then let's take that to be the same thing. How am I going to respond when people are sharing their concerns with me? Am I going to make them feel worse about it? That would be manipulative. Am I going to make them feel like I can solve all of their problems and I'm going to give them this big promise that I may or may not be able to do? No, that's manipulative. But if you go into a sales conversation and say, hey, the whole goal of this today is to try to figure out like what you're facing, what your struggles are, see if I can help you. And if I can, that's great. We're going to talk about the investment and what that looks like moving forward. But if I can't, I want to be able to give you other resources to be able to help you keep going. When you look at sales in that light, it takes the pressure off of you and it takes the pressure off of your customer. And then you can actually truly figure out, can you help them or can you not? Because that's the biggest difference. Like when we put on a facade, we don't actually know what's going on because they're putting on a facade and nobody has any idea what's actually happening and what they need and what their pain points are. But if we're able to like build that trust and take those layers down where they can share those with us, then it's our ethical obligation to say, yes, I can either help you and this is what it looks like, or no, I really can't. And this is who I think you should talk to next.
So I want to ask you a two-part question next. If someone is getting started building their sales experience for the first time and they want to do it the right way, what is the one step you would have them do? And then on the flip side, if someone has had a previous sales experience or sales team that maybe crosses the line of being that slimy sales, what would you have them do to start down the path of like going to more authentic experiences?
Yeah. So we actually created something called the service framework. It's called our service sales framework. And it is a framework of how to walk through that whole entire conversation from the very beginning all the way through. And we use the acronym service because we wanted it to be so painfully obvious that this is about our customer. This is not about us. When we start making it about us, that's where things get really dicey. That's when we start getting desperate. That's when we start getting frustrated. That's when we start getting needy, and all of that starts to come across. And so when you say, what's the very first thing I would do? You're saying when they're first starting their business?
Yeah, maybe they've just hired their first salesperson. It's no longer founder-led sales. How do we go like teach other people to sell with the same level of authenticity and care that we've poured into our products and our services?
Yeah, I would say that definitely comes into like the onboarding piece. And I would actually encourage them to work through that service framework to start saying, okay, this is how we lead it. And then also when you're first bringing your sales team in, helping understand the difference, like there's a difference between onboarding and helping them understand what's going on. Like you just sharing like, these are our products, this is what's going on. That's not going to help them to be able to move forward. So the biggest piece when anyone's trying to bring on their first sales team member is make sure you have a process that they can follow through. It's not just necessarily how is that conversation going, but like, what is your whole sales process? Because for a lot of founders, they just figured it out on their own. It was their heart. It was their soul. They just worked really hard. But when you bring somebody else in, you can't just be like, well, do what I do, because they're not you.
And they never will be able to.
They never will be.
And you've made a million mistakes in that process that you forgot you made in the first place and learned from.
So you definitely, the very first piece would be for like that founder to say, okay, we actually need to lay out our sales process so that they know what to do when they come in. The other piece that I would highly encourage is, because I'm certified through StoryBrand, so I do marketing consulting and sales coaching, sometimes people get things a little bit mixed up and they think they need a sales team member and they're not going to accomplish what they want them to. So you do have to ask yourself the question, am I having a marketing problem or am I having a sales problem, before you just jump in and hire your first sales rep? Because if you want that sales rep to fix all of your marketing, that's not usually what they're doing. They're saying, I'm going to handle it when the leads come to me and I need to know the process to move it forward. But if you're saying, hey, we're struggling in regards to getting those leads that can afford us, that want to be able to work with us, then you put your salesperson in a tough spot because you're asking them to do something that's they're not actually, they could be skilled to do, but it's harder to find them. Yeah. And people get that really confused sometimes. They're like, I need a salesperson. And you're like, well, actually, if you don't have the leads coming to your salesperson, they're not going to fix any of that. Now, if you have 100 leads coming in and you need help with that, absolutely. Then let's train them and get them on board and off they go.
Well, and I think that's an important distinction, right? Because I hear a lot of founders who are like, oh, I just don't enjoy the sales process.
Yes.
So I'm just going to go ahead and let someone else do that. And I'll just be the visionary founder who creates things and invents things and, you know, runs the business. And that, my friends, is not reality.
No, because the other piece is, it's really important for them to know they're not you. They're never going to be you. And even if they're like the best human being on the earth, they're never going to care about your business as much as you do, because it's not theirs. You're hiring them in. And so you have to be realistic in regards to, okay, what are our expectations for them? And you have to help them be set up for success. So many times people come in and they hire us and we come in and we're like, okay, this process is a hot mess. And so we can talk about bringing leads to you. We can talk about what you do when you have the leads, but then what you're doing with them, you need to get figured out. And it doesn't have to take forever, but you need to have those processes ironed out.
Yeah. And simply telling them to shadow you for a couple of weeks is not good enough. I see that too often, where they're like, we're not going to have a real process. Just follow me around. But it's like, oh, friend, he's not in your head. He doesn't know things that you just know inherently. And that was a hard thing for me to learn as a founder. You're right. Not everybody gets as excited about my business as I do. Not everybody obsesses about all of the parts and pieces that go into making my business great. And they don't think about it when they leave at 5:30.
No.
And after work is over.
And no.
That was hard for me to learn.
And when we say follow us for 2 weeks, usually what's happening is the founder's all over the place and they're not actually doing any of the things that they're going to do. They're not going to go to the cafes and meet with, it's a completely different world. And so if you're like, hey, follow me for 2 weeks, It just doesn't. You just want to have it set up so that they can be successful from the beginning. And then the other piece is, you want to have it so that you can be able to track, because what can happen is salespeople, and I'm one of them, you're one of them, we're highly optimistic. We want to make sure things go well, we're ready to go. And so if you don't have a good handle on what's happening, who they're calling, who they're talking to, what the conversion rates are, all of that, it's going to be hard, because they're going to come in and they're not going to do it manipulatively necessarily, but they're going to be as optimistic as possible. And
you have to be in sales, though. If you don't give yourself that, if you are not a well of optimism, you are going to find out how hard it is to do sales and to be rejected constantly and be hung up on constantly and ghosted constantly. So you have to be your own cheerleader. Yes. Otherwise, you're not going to make it.
Right. But when you go into a meeting and your boss is saying, hey, how are we doing? It's good for them to let's actually talk about the reality and the statistics of what's happening, not how we think they're doing, because they're going to be highly optimistic.
Yeah, always. Yeah. And you know, it's important too for everyone to understand what success looks like and what good looks like.
Yes.
Right. If I'm coming in and they're expecting me to suddenly, increase their revenue 20x.
Yeah.
Right. That's not a fair situation to put these sellers into.
No. So, and if you don't have the leads for them to even hit that, then that's completely unfair. That's where it comes into play of this is usually where they're coming in. The lead gets to them and that's what they do. If you want business development, you want marketing support. Okay. Then you start talking to them and saying, these are the leads that we're looking for to come to our business. But usually for sales, we're saying, yes, are we going out and trying to get new leads? 100%. But if that's their whole entire job, that's going to be really hard, because then they don't have the ability to actually talk to people and make the sales that they need to.
Right. It is a little bit of a numbers game sometimes too, mm-hmm. especially if you haven't done a good job of creating that funnel that's going to bring people in to have these conversations of giving people value right away.
Yeah.
So that when they talk to your salesperson, they've already have the trust that they're going to at least have a relevant conversation.
Yeah.
If not a right fit right now.
Yeah. And the other piece is depending, because I know every business is different, but specifically for me, when I'm working with service-based businesses, sometimes like even what they're selling is not completely nailed down. It's customized. And so it's like, okay, we can do this or we can do this. And then that is setting them up for failure as well. Like, it has to be crystal clear what you want them to be able to sell, what that looks like, what that time frame looks like, all of those things. So they can talk about it, like you said, intelligently, instead of just trying to not lose the sale and being overpromising.
So there's an important point that you made there that I really want to like double click on. The difference between trying not to lose a sale and trying to win a sale. So how do we think about setting up our people in a way that makes sure that it's always about, you know, trying to just finalize the sale rather than trying to avoid losing it?
For me, like when you say trying to finalize the sale, are you saying that people are getting nervous and they're like, oh, no, they're not going to buy? And how do we overcome that? Or what is your question? I'm sorry, I'm a little confused by it.
No, it's all good. Maybe I'm confused by it too. So thinking about like when you're in a sales situation, right? There's a very different mindset between I'm confident that this is a highly qualified lead, that they understand what they're buying here, that we're going to bring value, that I understand how to connect what we do to the value that they want.
Yes.
Versus I have a lead here and all I'm trying to do is make sure they close because I'm not sure of all of those elements.
Yeah. No, that is a great question. And that would come into play, like when we talk about how in our service framework, like recognizing the problem, because if you get the problem wrong, everything falls apart.
Yeah.
And even when they're sharing with you the problem, the reality is that's never the one. There's always these underlining concerns. And that comes back in when you're talking about your counseling. Like, you've got your surface level problem, but then you've got those underlying issues. And for them, for the salesperson, it's not them saying, well, Brooke and Alyssa said that that's not the real problem, so you have to tell me what the real problem is.
Right.
That's not what we're saying. But in order to like get to those layers, we validate what they're sharing. And then we ask another question to start uncovering it. So we can start figuring out what's driving them and what's motivating them. My sales are off is an external problem. I'm not getting the leads that I need is an external problem. There are other things that are driving them and motivating them. And once they find that out, that's when they can truly make the connections and say, okay, this is how our products and services are going to be able to help you. Or we're actually like, this is not right. Because we also know it is not worth it to get the wrong customer.
No, even if it feels like it should be, because like, hey, I've been at a startup and sometimes you are desperate for any dollar, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have never taken a deal, like I've never regretted deals except for the ones that clearly were the wrong fit. And then you get done with the deal and you're like, well, that wasn't worth it. I'm never doing that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even though I got a dollar, even though someone paid me and I'm achieving my outcomes, which is to make money with my business, it does not feel good. It does not help the team if you have a team. And it really just distracts you from what you might be the best in the world at.
And that's the biggest piece. Like, we don't actually take into consideration a lot of time the emotional investment of a wrong customer.
Yeah.
It costs so much money. Because one, it's costing money. Two, we're both coming in and we're frustrated because they're probably frustrated and we're frustrated. But then the other piece is every moment that we're spending with them is a moment that we're not spending on our business and growing new clients. And so what we have learned is you can have a great client and they pay and all of that. And those are all fabulous things. But if it's not the right fit, you're constantly thinking about it because you want to make sure you're still bringing them the value. But you're like, this isn't fitting. Or for them, they're just like changing their mind every other day. And you're like, whoa. This is not a fit. This is not what we do necessarily. And so, but you have to have a couple of those wrong customers to be able to probably build that confidence to then recognize one and just be like, I'm going to stop this before this even goes anywhere. And that's where it comes into giving other resources, just to be honest and saying, hey, I don't actually think what you're looking for is us. I don't think we're necessarily going to be a great fit, but I do think that this could be a good resource for you. And I think if that is people's directive, and a lot of times people are like, how can you say that?
Right. How can you give up a sale?
As a salesperson, like, trust me, you will make so many more sales when you approach it that way, because one, maybe it's not a right fit, and it's not because they're a jerk. It's just not a right fit. They respect that and they come back more often than not. They come back with a different problem and say, hey, this doesn't work. Or they talk to their buddies and they're like, she told me that she couldn't actually help me, but I think she could really help you. Like, I have never had it go badly for me or for any of my clients when we actually say, this isn't going to work.
And again, it's super hard, right? Because when you're, especially if you're, I joined a pre-revenue startup out of college. So we were like desperate for any dollar, our first dollar ever.
Yeah.
But we learned a lot of hard lessons the hard way of just saying yes to things because like, well, I guess technically we can do it. Do we want to do it? Is it aligned to what we want to do or what we want to be? Right. No, but they have money and we're poor.
Yeah.
Even though I'm kind of restarting a startup, I don't think I would do it again, even because I know now. Mm-hmm. How much of a distraction it can be.
Yeah.
How much you can end up down a road of delivering something you never intended to, how it can dilute the value of your other products, and it can hurt your brand reputation overall. The world is a lot smaller than you think it is.
Yeah.
And one bad delivery might be the difference between your success and not.
100%. And again, like what you're saying, when you first start, you're also trying to figure things out for yourself. You're trying to figure out, okay, what is our business doing? How are we going to be doing this? What are our products and services? Like, there's nothing wrong in trying to figure those things out. But the faster you figure that out and the more confident you feel in this is what we're doing, then those are the people you're going to go talk to. Those are the groups you're going to go to. Then you know where you're headed and your energy is well spent, especially when you're a founder. You're one or two people. Like, you can't be everywhere at the same time. You can't meet everyone that you want to. And so you have to be particular in who you're talking to. But I agree with you. You don't really learn it until you've actually had the effects of it. And you're like, okay,
that's
not worth it.
It's not something you can read in a news article or hear on this podcast. You do have to. It is a canon event, I fear, that you have to experience.
Yeah. But hopefully it doesn't have to be like life shattering. Hopefully it could be a quick one. And then you're like, all right, let's take everybody else's advice that they've ever heard
and take it
wrong
seriously.
Customers do not work.
So, Brooke, if someone is wanting to learn more, if they want to expand their knowledge, who else is out there? Who is leading the charge on changing the way that we build relationships with our customers?
Yeah. So I'm certified through StoryBrand. And so Donald Miller is a big, he's a big coach for me in regards to, he has books like the story brand, building a story brand, marketing made simple. And it's all about what he uses in his words, making the customer the hero, even when you're doing that in your marketing, when you're doing that in your sales conversations. And I feel like that is the best way to be able to do business. That doesn't mean they're always right. That doesn't mean we do absolutely everything that they say, but it means we are trying to serve them in what we're doing. And so he's written a lot of great books. And he's a person that I would really recommend just to be able to even think about. He's also done How to Build a Small Business. That's another book of his. And so if people are just starting, it's a great resource for them as well.
And if someone is connecting with you and they want to learn more, where can they find you online?
Yeah. So I'm very active on LinkedIn. So they can find me, Brooke Greening, in LinkedIn. And then I also, if they're trying to figure out like, hey, this service framework sounds like something I would be interested in, we have a quick assessment that we offer. And so they can take the service sales assessment. They can find that on our website and they can also find it on our LinkedIn profile.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the Girl Signal. This was a great conversation.
Oh, I loved it, Alyssa. Thank you so much for having me.